This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Sell this coal overseas.
Tell us more about the government's investigation into the coal leasing program.
Because of the things that I've just referred to, that's received some publicity, and as a result of that, the Department of Interior, as I understand it, is being investigated in three different investigations. The Government Accountability Office is investigating this whole program at the request of Representative Markey from the Congress, and those investigations are ongoing, and they are all attempting to get at these same questions that I've raised. I mean, it's not just the environmental groups who are concerned about this. It's a number of other entities, including some members of the U.S. Congress, and there's quite a bit of concern about whether or not the U.S. citizens and taxpayers are, their interests are truly being looked after by the federal government in this case, and as I said, we believe they're not, but there are a number of other people and organizations who believe the same.
Was there any particular reason that you delivered the letter today?
Well, Secretary Jewell was just confirmed recently, and we wanted to bring this matter to her attention at the earliest opportunity, and we believe that it's time for the agency to take a step back and really reevaluate this whole federal coal leasing program and take a hard look at the way it's being run now, and we hope very much they'll be able to make some substantial changes for the better.
What's the next course of action regarding these issues?
I believe we're hopeful that Secretary Jewell will look into this immediately and will put in place a moratorium until these various investigations and their own analysis can be done, and then we hope that that will lead to a substantial overhaul of this whole federal coal leasing program.
I've been speaking with Connie Wilbert with Sierra Club Wyoming about the moratorium request at the Powder River Basin. This is Rachel Bennett with KBOO News.
Today in Salem, Governor John Kitzhaber spoke today before the Senate Finance Committee as they opened hearings concerning the introduction of a 5% sales tax on Oregon goods. Since 1933, 9 attempts to introduce sales tax to the state have failed. Kitzhaber himself led an effort that lost 3-1 during his tenure as Senate president. Oregon's lack of sales tax puts heavy burden on revenues from income taxes, which are among the highest in the country. The governor emphasized that a key number of steps are required before moving forward with the plan, emphasizing that legislators need to get a better idea of what voters think is wrong with the current tax structure. Kitzhaber states it's unlikely a plan will be presented to voters before 2014.
The Oregon Senate Business and Transportation Committee voted today on Senate Bill 833, which would grant short-term licenses to Oregonians who cannot prove their citizenship or legal residency. The bill, sponsored by 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats in each chamber, is projected to reach the Senate floor. The Senate committee heard heated testimony last Thursday from both advocates and opponents of the bill. Supporters emphasized that driver's licenses are a public safety issue and that discouraging undocumented Oregonians from obtaining a license does nothing to address immigration issues. Opponents cite fears of terrorism and lack of fairness in allowing non-citizens driving privileges.
Oregon lawmakers passed a bill which would bar employers from requesting access to the social media accounts of employees and interviewees. After media reports highlighted the practice of employers inquiring about access to potential employees' Facebook accounts, Representative Margaret Doherty wrote a bill preventing employers from asking for access or requiring potential employees to like them on the social network. Business groups have introduced amendments to legislation protecting companies doing background research into criminal offenses and stating that information such as passwords obtained over private servers would not be subject to the law. The bill passed the House 56-3 and now heads for the Senate.
Members of the Portland chapter of the War Resisters League met today at the Metanoia Peace House to celebrate their ongoing efforts to resist war. For more on the story, KBOO's Jimmy Tardy brings us voices from the meeting.
Every year, the War Resisters Portland chapter gets together and we pool some of our money together that otherwise would have gone to the federal government and to wars and killing. And instead we redirect that money to life-affirming causes, mostly local groups, but in the case of Bradley Manning and the 1 Million Bones Project, which is a national project, but usually local groups that are in need of money that are, the Children's Clinic, Food Not Bombs, Coffee Strong. We almost always try to give to one veterans group and to support the vets, because we feel that's really important. So this year, the three groups that we've chosen is the 1 Million Bones Project, which Ann Shannon is organizing for the Portland area. Courage to Resist on behalf of Bradley Manning's Defense Fund, and Food Not Bombs, which does a lot of good local community outreach here. And my friend Elizabeth is here to accept that money. So we have money and checks for each of those groups, and I was hoping that maybe Ann and Elizabeth and Will, you could say just a little bit of something about each of your groups, your projects.
Extremely important support for the Bradley Manning Defense Fund stems from the fact that we do not have transparency within our government whatsoever. We got that pledge from Barack Obama that he would open things up and the information would be available much more readily than it had previously, and it's been a very great disappointment.
Some members of the Metanoia community were on hand to welcome the guests and to further explain their rationale for choosing this form of resistance.
To welcome you, first of all, to the 18th Avenue Peace House, a place of community, hospitality, and peacemaking. 27 years we've been here in this spot, and we just continue to meet. So we had a prayer vigil every Sunday for about 10 years throughout the whole thing. So that's something about where you're here today, close to the Peace Bowl, which has been a fixture here for almost since the very beginning of the Peace House. What we're doing here today is acknowledging the fact that we are military tax resistors and that we're in different ways expressing that in a public way. Pat and I, for our part, for the last 8 years or so, have been refusing to pay any of our federal income tax and have been giving the money instead to Multnomah County and making presentation of that at a meeting of the Multnomah County Commission. We're hoping to do that on the 25th, and any of you are welcome to come.
Dear sisters and brothers of the IRA, we weep for those who die under barrages of drones. We have children and grandchildren, and we try to understand how we would feel if they were victims of such attacks. As we look at the serious cutbacks in human services in these very difficult times for the most vulnerable of our citizens, we are redirecting these funds to persons most affected by these cuts, the homeless, the mentally ill, victims of genocide at the hands of our government. And I'd like to say one thing about the genocide, that we basically pay other people to do our dirty work for us. It would be our great delight if you who receive these letters would think seriously about joining us in this witness. We recognize you have a job to do, but we know you might well want to see such a change. And we're redirecting some money to Right to Dream, too, and to Bradley Manning, the Bradley Manning Fund, and to Food Not Bombs, and to the 1 Million Bones Project.
You've just been listening to some members of the Portland chapter of the War Resisters League and their annual April 15 Tax Day celebration of war tax resistance. Tune in to Occupy Portland Radio this coming Wednesday, the 17th at 6 p.m. right here on KBOO for more on this story. For KBOO News, I'm Jimmy Tardy.
Tomorrow is National Healthcare Decision Day, a nationwide initiative to encourage people to plan ahead of a health crisis. KBOO's Evan Owen Stively, in collaboration with the Oregon News Service, has more.
If the only certainties in life are death and taxes, this week there's a chance to deal with them both. Today, of course, is Income Tax Day. But Tuesday is National Healthcare Decision Day. It's a reminder to let loved ones and doctors know how you might want sudden or end-of-life medical events handled, if you're unable to make that call. Dr. Will Kennedy is the medical director for Adventist Health Hospice in Portland. He says having a living will is a good start, But this is about more than medical details.
What are the things that you as a person value? And that is, what is quality of life to you? What are different types of circumstances in which you might make different decisions? And helping them understand what you would want.
Kennedy says it's important to put your wishes in writing in the form of advance directives, and every state has slightly different rules and forms. Whatever your preferences, he says it's important that your doctor also has a record of them. Kennedy says the discussion doesn't have to happen all at once. It can be handled in stages and documents updated over time, with greater detail necessary for a person facing a chronic illness. For those who don't want to talk about it, he suggests framing the conversation not about failing health, but about peace of mind for family members and friends.
When these issues are not clarified, they can create a tremendous legacy of grief and distress because they did not know what to do when someone had some type of dramatic medical event, and they're left with the uncertainty and sometimes guilt about making decisions on what they thought that that person would have wanted.
The group, Compassion and Choices, says Alzheimer's and related dementias add a complication that should be addressed early. Most advanced directives take effect if a person is terminally ill or unconscious, and people who suffer from dementia may be neither, but still unable to make medical decisions. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, this is Evan Owen Stively for KBOO News.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio News at 5:30, followed by Labor Radio discussions on working class issues at 6. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline, connecting with the community inside. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is expected to have intermittent clouds and sunshine, highs near 58 degrees. Tomorrow evening should be mostly cloudy, lows around 42.
It's 5:15, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Let's tally the bank robberies. J.P. Morgan Chase engaged in massive fraud to foreclose without cause or due process on innocent homeowners, tossing thousands of families into the streets. Goldman Sachs profited by marketing an investment package that was designed to fail, collecting millions from a side bet it made that, sure enough, its investors would lose money. HSBC has been butt deep in a swamp of illegal money laundering schemes, willingly processing billions of dirty dollars for vicious drug cartels and peddlers of arms to terrorist forces at war with America. Many more examples abound. These are not poor saps desperately robbing a branch bank for a few hundred dollars, but criminal enterprises run by multimillionaire Wall Streeters who run in the finest social circles and hobnob with the nation's political elite. Their corruption is complete. Their crimes are documented. Yet, unlike sad sack bank robbers, not a single one of these robber barons has even been prosecuted, much less jailed. In fact, frustrated prosecutors in the Justice Department's criminal division report that when it came to Wall Street, there were no investigations going on. There were no subpoenas, no document reviews, no wiretaps. Where are the cops on the Wall Street beat? Up in the suites, coddling the culprits. That's because Attorney General Eric Holder and the chief of his criminal division, Lanny Brewer, have previously enjoyed lucrative careers as lawyers defending the very barons they're now supposed to be prosecuting. They know many of them on a first-name basis. Holder and Brewer both hail from the same Washington law firm, Covington & Burling, that specializes in representing corporate clients with legal issues at the Justice Department. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, when engaged in high crimes, it literally pays to have friends in the very highest of places.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
Two bomb explosions detonated near the finish line of today's Boston Marathon. The explosions occurred just before 3 o'clock Eastern Time as runners were crossing the finish line. Two people were killed and over 100 injured. A third explosion occurred this afternoon at the John F. Kennedy Library. No one was injured. It cannot be confirmed if the explosion is related to those at the marathon. Police reportedly have found unexploded devices along the marathon route and are investigating the possibility of more bombs. Eyewitness reports indicate that multiple people were struck with flying debris, sustaining wounds. Other eyewitnesses said that people had lost limbs and spectators rushed for safety amid the chaos after the explosions as medical personnel attended to the injured. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attacks, and the police have no current reported suspects. The Federal Aviation Administration barred low-flying aircraft from within 3.5 miles of the site. The Boston Marathon is the world's oldest annual marathon and attracts around 500,000 spectators each year, with an average of about 20,000 registered participants.
The United States Supreme Court today heard arguments in a case that could lead to significant changes in the American medical research industry. Myriad Genetics, a research firm which currently holds patents on two genes linked to ovarian and breast cancers, is being sued by an alliance of medical professionals and associations who claim that, like gold or iron, human genes are not subject to patent. The genes in question are BRCA1 and BRCA2, whose presence can help identify early stages of cancer. Myriad did not fabricate these genes, but discovered their role in cancerous cell mutation and developed a test to detect them. They currently hold exclusive rights to those tests, a fact which supporters of the plaintiff say is literally killing cancer patients. Some insurance carriers will not cover the test, which costs $4,000 out of pocket for patients, even though the price tag is closer to $200 for Myriad. The test cannot be obtained elsewhere because of patent restriction. The 1900% markup, says Myriad, is essential to encourage innovation and reward their investment in research. Gene patenting has been allowed in the U.S. for 30 years. If this policy is reversed, the profit model of the research industry would change drastically, say opponents of the suit. The Obama administration has attempted to broker a compromise, calling for the separate consideration of naturally occurring and human-engineered genes.
The Oregon House has passed legislation regulating the use of drones used by law enforcement. The bill, which passed with a vote of 52-7, represents the beginning of a statewide effort to regulate the use of drones. The bill maintains that any use of drones by police in Oregon must adhere to already existing surveillance laws, and any material obtained by drones must be destroyed within 30 days unless it is being used in an ongoing criminal investigation. It also prohibits the use of weaponized drones and mandates that municipalities draft policies concerning drone use. The bill does not restrict the activities of drone hobbyists.
The U.S. Department of Defense has decided to call off the issuing of combat medals for drone pilots. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel released a statement today saying that he had decided to scrap the new Distinguished Warfare Medal, which would be added to other combat-related medals after the initiative was roundly criticized by veterans because the drone medal would have outranked established military medals such as the Bronze Star and Purple Heart. The medal had been approved by Hagel's predecessor. After an inquiry ordered by Hagel, the defense secretary determined that the new medal and its perceived precedence were an unneeded distraction.
Car bombings across Iraq today killed 55 people just after the first elections were scheduled following the withdrawal of U.S. forces. The coordinated bombings occurred in Anbar province, Shiite-dominated areas of southern Iraq, and in Baghdad. The attacks in Baghdad killed 25 people. Today marks the deadliest day in Iraq since the 19th of March, when bombings marked the 10-year anniversary of the U.S. invasion, and those bombings killed 65 civilians. Municipal elections are scheduled to take place Sunday. There has been no claim of responsibility for the attack, though Iraqi officials blame al-Qaeda for the violence.
Opium production in Afghanistan is expected to rise for a third consecutive year, according to a United Nations report issued today. The rise comes despite the efforts of an international campaign to divert Afghan farmers from cultivating opium poppies and years of decline in Afghanistan's opium production. The report warns that opium may be Afghanistan's largest export by the time U.S. forces depart the war-torn country, ending its 13-year occupation by 2014. Opium is the naturally occurring resin extracted from poppies to manufacture heroin. The report was issued by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime and was based on extensive surveys. It found that opium production had increased in 12 of the country's 34 provinces. The established land in opium production is also expected to top the 388 acres in production for 2008, an all-time annual high. Cultivation also skyrocketed in Helmand and Kandahar provinces, where President Obama ordered U.S. troops as part of his Afghanistan surge, which ended last year. The report concluded that 70% of Afghanistan's opium production occurs in those provinces where the surge occurred. The international demand for heroin and opium's current high prices are the primary reason for its rising production.
High-ranking European officials are scrambling to respond to the release of information regarding secret offshore bank accounts. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or ICIJ, began releasing information following a three-year investigation into the Australian firepower scandal, which involved offshore tax havens and corporate fraud. After a 15-month analysis of the data they received from a 260-gigabyte database, the ICIJ began releasing the information last Monday. The ensuing week has seen governments around the world responding with some very strong language. The Prime Minister of Luxembourg announced plans to eliminate bank secrecy rules for citizens of the European Union. French President François Hollande called for eradication of tax havens throughout the world. According to the ICIJ, an agreement has been struck between Britain, France, Germany, Italy, and Spain to begin the regular exchange of banking and tax information aimed at identifying tax dodgers and other financial misdealings. British Virgin Island authorities, where the information originated, made a statement announcing that the information in the release was a fraction of the total hidden banking schemes in their jurisdiction. The ICIJ data identifies high-ranking officials across the globe with secret offshore bank accounts in countries including but not limited to Russia, Thailand, Kuwait, Venezuela, and Pakistan. Occupy Portland Radio will have more on this story Wednesday, 6 p.m.
And now the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, April 15, 2013. Israeli soldiers clash with youth in the southern West Bank, and settlers attack a village in the northern West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli settlers attacked on Monday the village of Madama near the northern West Bank city of Nablus. According to villagers, a group of armed settlers from the nearby illegal settlement of Yetzar attacked villagers' homes and destroyed the water reservoir that supplies the entire village with drinking water. Later on Monday, clashes erupted between invading Israeli troops and local youth at Ahadar village near Bethlehem in the southern part of the West Bank. Local sources reported that Israeli soldiers used tear gas and sound bombs to attack residents and youth. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. In other news, a report written by Israeli journalist Gideon Levy and published by Haaretz Hebrew Language Daily accuses the Israeli military of deliberately executing two Palestinians recently. The two were shot by the army at the Ennab roadblock east of Anabta near the northern West Bank city of Tulkarm. The two Palestinians, identified as Naji al-Balbisi, 18, and Amr Nassar, 17, were shot by several rounds of live ammunition from a close range. At least four other Palestinians were injured. Levy said that on the eve of Wednesday, April 3rd, under the military monitoring tower near the entrance of Tulkarm, an execution took place. There can be no other words to describe what happened there. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, April 15th News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Benoura and me, Tarina Aguilar.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032.
Our production team for tonight's newscast is Mike Klepfer, Evan Owen Stively, and Rachel Bennett. The producer is Serena Fong. Special thanks to KBOO reporter Jimmy Tardy. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Interim Evening Affairs and Public Affairs Director is Rebecca Ney.
A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. If you'd like to call your elected representative about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with.
The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K264AA Corvallis 100.7 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Serena Fong.
And I'm John Rasmussen. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, Joe Uris discusses the Keystone XL pipeline in terms of oil, power, and money. At 9 on Alternative Radio, environmental activist David Suzuki speaks on a radical environmental paradigm.
At 10, Air Cascadia asks, do you believe American Muslims and Arab Americans are second-class citizens? Should they be legally subject to Israel's policy of ethnic and religious profiling? Senator Barbara Boxer's U.S.-Israel Strategic Partnership Act of 2013 does exactly that. Chris Andre speaks with Corey Saylor, Legislative Director of the Council on American Islamic. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein.
At an 11 on Stage and Studio, host D-May Roberts speaks with Artist Repertory Theater Artistic Director Damaso Rodriguez and veteran actress Linda Alper about the West Coast premiere of Ten Chimneys. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Brian Fariso, director of the Portland Art Museum. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. If you missed it, you can still contribute by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for more national and international news from the worker-run collective at Free Speech Radio News. Good night, John.
Good night, Serena.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, April 15th, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, in Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro wins a narrow victory for presidency. He's pledged to continue many of the policies of the late leader Hugo Chavez, but the opposition demands a recount. The U.S. Supreme Court takes up a case on whether a corporation can patent a human gene. And it's tax day in the United States. We'll take a look at the billions of dollars hidden in offshore tax havens. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Nell Abram with FSRN Headlines. There were two explosions at the finish line of the Boston Marathon today. Boston police confirmed two people died. At least 23 more were injured, some of them critically. The area surrounding the finish line was placed on lockdown and a no-fly zone was put in place. The two explosions were just minutes apart. A third blast about an hour later was controlled by police. There's no official word yet on the cause of the explosions. In Turkey, a judge gave a world-renowned concert pianist a 10-month suspended sentence for blasphemy. The charges stem from sarcastic remarks about Islam on his personal Twitter account. FSRN's Jacob Resnick reports.
The 43-year-old pianist Fazıl Say, heard here playing the Turkish march, was charged after he wrote a series of Twitter posts that were mocking religion, especially Islam's prohibition of alcohol. His lawyers argued he wasn't trying to insult religious people, but the court was not swayed and found he had violated a Turkish law that criminalizes any degradation of organized religion. Say is not the first member of the literati in Turkey to be convicted on such charges, but his case is the first to involve social media. Sai, who has performed with the New York Philharmonic and Berlin Symphony, told reporters he was sadder about the state of freedom in Turkey than for his own 10-month sentence, which was suspended provided he doesn't run afoul of the law in the next 5 years. The musician has since closed down his Twitter account. Jacob Resnick, FSRN, Istanbul.
Another teenaged boy remains in an Israeli jail accused of throwing stones at Israeli troops. But this boy hails from Louisiana, has American citizenship, and his supporters are calling for U.S. help to get him freed. Lena Odgard reports.
14-year-old Mohammed Khalik, an American Palestinian from New Orleans, was arrested on April the 5th by Israeli soldiers at his family's home in the Palestinian West Bank. The teenager is accused of throwing rocks, a charge which can result in a prison sentence of up to 20 years. Today, Palestine solidarity activists urge Americans to contact local politicians and call for Khalik's immediate release. Advocacy officer Randa Wahbe, who represents the teen, told local news sources that he has likely been subjected to abuse while in detention. His braces are broken and he has not been allowed to see his father outside of the court. There are currently 236 children, ages 12 to 17, held in Israeli jails, according to the human rights group Defense for Children International. Earlier this year, UNICEF released a review concluding that for Palestinian children in Israeli military custody, ill-treatment is widespread, systematic, and institutionalized. The middle schooler appeared before a judge last week, but his case was adjourned until later this week. Lina Otgor, FSRN, Ramallah.
Today is April 15th, Tax Day in the United States, and it's also the Global Day of Action on Military Spending. FSRN's Jim Pullen reports from one of a series of actions around the country protesting that taxpayers are forced to fund the American war machine.
Gary Erb has a